Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Jules Gill, I sound like absolute death.
You do indeed. You've been smoking the hype pipe and you are coming down hard, my friend.
Now, we did try to record this a little bit before and I got my usual loud self involved, in which case my throat then went, no, you can't do that. So I had to go and get some water. I'm back on the lozenges. I'm going to try and get through the recording. I'm going to stay relatively hushed. I'll take a lot of breaths in between my stuff because I'm an ill boy.
What you need to do is take a page out of the one and only Adam Cleary's book with his Turbo Lemsips, which is where you get like, you put the Lemsip and the lozenge and something else, I think it's like a painkiller, into the same mug and you put it all in the hot water away. And then you just chuck it down, yeah? And you'll be apparently right as rain.
I went to Holland and Barrett. I got an assortment of honey and lemon echinaceas. It's got a weird word.
You can get some
like
cream for that, mate.
Well, apparently, but I mean, it's working wonders for the old throat as well. But yeah, worth pointing out that it's not the COVID. I've done a few tests. It always comes back negative. It is just the old seasonal madness, which always seems to kick in when you're about to be breaking up for the holidays.
Well, you had a recent thing where you went into the office, didn't you, to go see Spider-Man, the new one with the guys, and you were recording that with the team. So maybe you've just picked up the general lurgy. You've got lurgy 2021.
Maybe. That was my first masked cinema screening in a while because I haven't really been seeing anything. And then went to see some Spider-Man. We'll get back to Spidey in a bit because some people have been asking us about
will
that.
Will we now?
We will indeed. I should also have said, this is the Entitled Partner Podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Do you want me to do the intro? Like, do you want me to do the intro? Just because of the fact you've got
I sound beautiful right now.
Yeah, but listen to this. I can do it in like the smooth thing. So it's
you
like
kind of it.
So welcome everyone to the UBP, here on 105. Jazz. Pull up a groove and relax with Scott Tailford and I as we walk through the witty and wonderful world of gaming banter. We take questions that are submitted by you each and every week over on Twitter, and then we basically try to answer them with an air of authority, but deep down inside, we're just bumbling through life.
I need one of those bits of background music that's just like doom dit.
You should have like done some clicking, like the jazz clicks.
If only I could have produced that on the fly. But so massive apologies to everybody for listening to my broken tones this week. I didn't realize it was going to be that bad. And you never know how bad you sound when you're working from home because you don't have to talk to anybody. And then you flick the record button on and it's like, oh, you sound like actual death.
Well,
anyway,
we've basically got the spirit of Christmas is alive within us both because I'm the spirit of Christmas future because I'm very excitable and I'm looking forward to the future that's coming right now. And you are the Christmas spirit of sounding like arse. That's your one instead of the Christmas spirit of past.
I feel like this always happens to me. Like every time when it gets around to Christmas time, can't wait until I'm off, booked all the holidays off. I'm done for Christmas, for New Year. Yeah. After Monday, and then my body's just like, do you want a lovely little flu, do you? Do you want a lovely little cold, do
Here's
you?
A gift.
Here's a lovely little thing so you can just go horizontal for the next 2 weeks. But anyway, we always get people's questions in, people's thoughts, whatever they would like us to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I've got a lovely response now. I do want to point out that we're going to be doing a Christmas special next Friday.
If you're alive, that is.
If I'm alive, I was going to say, I'll see what state I'm in. This thing might finish me off between then and now. all the questions that came in for this week's podcast that are more Christmas themed, I thought we'd carry them over because we got a lovely response this week anyway.
Makes sense.
So massive thank you to everybody. And we'll get through as many as we can right now. So first question from Matthias Grimm, who says, thoughts on the Splinter Cell remake, whatever you've got. Merry Yule to you both. All the love, peace and joy to you and yours. Cheers, stay safe. Well, thank you very much.
Cheers and big bless to you, my friend. Hope you have a lovely happy holidays and all of that jazz. Mm-hmm. In terms of Splinter Cell, I know that I'm basically just buying time until Scott explodes into a whirlwind of worry and fury, but I'm probably going to be echoing the same thoughts that you're going to bring up, which is that this current, I believe, I can actually quote you, Scott. The best franchise being resurrected by the worst iteration of Ubisoft. Yes. I believe that was along the same lines.
It was the most requested game in Ubisoft history being made by the worst version of Ubisoft in Ubisoft history. I believe that
sums it up pretty well, doesn't
kinda,
it?
Kinda, yeah. I mean, the thing is, they officially announced it. They said they're doing a remake. It's not a continuation, so it's whatever you want to then assume about how they'll do a remake, because obviously you've got the Activision approach, you've got the sort of... Yeah. reskinned approach, the Mass Effect style stuff, and Tony Hawk's approach, whatever, which is Activision 2. But I think that in this case, they got out there, they did a press release, they had an announcement from the team members saying that they do have some of the original team on board, and they said that they're very aware of how Splinter Cell used to play, and they're remaking it because they just want to go back to that original game, and they've got some of the veteran team members. I don't believe it for a second. Yeah. I don't think that modern-day Ubisoft would ever make a traditional Splinter Cell, so I just don't see it. But I mean, like, maybe. It's weird because you don't want to just say people are lying. I'm sure they have the best intentions. But I think that because considering the state of the Prince of Persia remake and just the reality of the way Ubisoft do business and the amount, the sort of mechanics they'll want in there, and the fact that this is announced alongside them doing all the NFT stuff. So I'm just like, there's like one thing that's horrible business and then one thing that's for the fans. And I'm like, this is still the same company, though. Like, I don't trust the Splinter Cell side of things whatsoever.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was just another Watch Dogs or Ghost Recon Wildlands style thing of a giant open world with you doing stealth missions, but they're not even stealth missions. They're just kind of more action orientated ones.
Well, the thing that they need to take influence from is Hitman. Like, I always think that the way to do a new Splinter Cell would be give us little pockets of levels that you can drop into and replay, and you know, you can plug in live targets. You could do all that stuff. And them going down the remake route makes me think they won't do any of that stuff, but they will take the original one's levels. And then I guess I wonder, because you can't do an open world game if you're calling it a remake, like, fundamentally. But I just don't trust Ubi to not mess it up. I mean,
The thing is that as we've come to see with the Final Fantasy VII remake, you can use the title remake to change nearly everything. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It just means like literally a redo of it, just going like, we're going to just do it completely differently now. Like, I feel like they're going to do what they always do, which is trade on the nostalgia. They'll sell us all the right things by showing us trailers and promotional material that will suggest a stealth-heavy, level-based and very scripted, almost tightly controlled experience. And what we'll probably get is another Ubisoft the game,
well, that's the thing. I do wonder, because the thing is, like, Ubisoft, like I said, like, you know, they're doing this alongside the NFT announcement, which went down like a lead balloon that was literally on fire.
NFTs,
like,
NFTs make my head hurt,
I know. And we've got a couple of NFT questions in a bit,
really?
But like, oh god, yeah. But in regards to this, like, you know, there's always that thing. I remember Mike Bithell said this on the Play Watch Listen podcast. He was like, people only ever greenlight remakes or remasters if they then want to try and do something new later. But it's the safe bet. It's the thing that lets you sort of prod the embers of a fan base and go like, oh, do you want this? Is this going to work or not? And I think that's why they've gone down this route rather than just do a new Splinter Cell. And maybe they're doing this because they do have a full Splinter Cell in the works. But I don't know. It's a weird I'd still love the original Splinter Cell trilogy, but if you go back to them now, they're so anti what Ubisoft are that they would have to, it almost feels like it would have to come from a different studio. And it's also, like I said, it's alongside the NFT stuff. And it also reminds me of when they greenlit Beyond Good and Evil 2. And it was different circumstances. They were under hostile takeover from Vivendi. But it's that thing of like, look how good we are, guys. We're worth saving. We've got this stuff. Where is it? And then like this is years later and whatever. So I know they are different contexts, but in terms of, greenlighting something to sort of take the focus away from something else, that's what it reminds me of. I have zero faith. I have negative faith that this will be any good. I didn't even ask you what your thoughts were. Do you have any faith that they can make this work?
Absolutely, Bupkis, my friend. I will look at it.
Stanley Bupkis.
I'm gonna let you be the judge of it and like play through it. You're gonna probably do the review for it, because I can't imagine anyone trying to fight you. It'd be like a dog with a chew toy there. And once you give me your honest verdict, I will trust you implicitly, and I will probably just go off of it based on that. Like, if you tell me that it's a good stealth game, then I'll be on board to get back at hyped for
for him again. But unfortunately, I'm just keeping my expectations ground zero low.
Same. I hope that if they do the original game with the mark and execute mechanic from Conviction and Blacklist, then we'll be fine. If you just keep the vague level designs, whatever. But I just zero faith. I wish I had more faith. I know that the day's finally come with a new Splinter Cell, and I'm just this guy. I'm this doubting guy, but I'm doubting Thomas. But it's the worst possible time in Ubisoft history, so I just don't buy it. Next question from Jack Asbury. I'm still massively hyped by Spider-Man. Just want to know what you guys thought, and if you enjoyed it as much as I did. I watched your spoiler videos and non-spoiler videos, so I have a pretty good idea. Well, thank you very much for keeping up with that stuff. Jules, I don't think you've seen it yet.
No, but I don't care about spoilers either.
I'll not do craziness because there's some big things going down in that movie.
The thing is that I'm the same with video games. As soon as something comes out, even if I'm super, super into the franchise, if a review comes out before I played it, I'm going to watch it. I don't care. Here's a massive spoiler point, I'll be like, cool, now I've got something to look forward to. Because it's true, I like being surprised and everything like that, but I'm still equally surprised if somebody says, this just happened. I'll be like, whoa, okay,
it's cool. Also that thing, because I don't want to know until I've seen the thing, but also I do think that if you do find out, it is also, sometimes it does work, because it's like, well, does the plot build to this point? Does it feel natural? Does it feel like a payoff? And that's why rewatching that stuff can feel even better sometimes.
So I watched the non-spoiler and spoiler videos of your guys' reviews, and I spoke to Amy as well about what she thought of it, because she wasn't like a super Spider-Man fan, as it were. She came
Spidey is mostly Tom Holland.
So I was like, okay, cool. So I got like a nice little different viewpoints and perspectives there. And from what I've been told, for me, as a Spider-Man fan, I will be enjoying this film. I will love all of the callbacks. I will love all of the references they make to the franchise and the self-awareness of it all. But I will probably leave the experience feeling like, okay, cool. That was almost like a stopgap of it's just going, like a, hey, like remember a, this. And now we're trying to kickstart your energy hype levels for the very next much MCU phase.
It's very much a ride. It's very much a roller coaster ride. I don't think the first half of the movie is even really a movie. It's just a sequence of images. But the second half is much better.
But that's okay. You can have movies that are just entertaining, and you don't look for the sort of like the deeper meaning and the context of it all, because it's like, look at the Fast and Furious series. Like, that is out and out silly, and it rewards fans for just suspending their disbelief each and every time.
True, I believe
that this is the same sort of emotion that you just go in saying, hey, look, I just want a really nice ride. We've got, let's face it, we're in the kind of the doldrums after the Infinity War saga has like finished. So we need something to really just like pop the boys, get us back into the room, and then just be like, cool, are you all ready for the next thing? It's almost like this sorbet experience to cleanse your palate, to move things forward.
I will 1,000,000% say, because I think people should go see it. I think it's a big event movie. You should try and see it with an audience. There's so many bits in it that our audience were just freaking out at. But the way that it ends only makes me excited more than ever for the future of Spider-Man movies. And it's just like, but that's a vague statement, to keep it as vague as possible. You should go see it if you can. Yeah. Next question from Jacob Wright.
He's coughing. It's not Jacob Wright today.
He's coughing. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says, hope you're well, legends. Well, I'm trying to be, but the throat doesn't want to let me. What's your favorite video game soundtrack? God of War 2018 and Cyberpunk, despite its faults, the score/album is truly epic. Any recommendations?
I mean, that is a really good question, because I think that we were talking about this a couple of episodes ago about differences between soundtracks and sort of curated playlists of like different things. So you kind of have to separate them out in order to
do it.
I would say for me, like, a soft spot will always be the Final Fantasy VIII soundtrack, because I think it was a couple of years ago, Spotify updated it, so they produced like a full orchestral versions with like a live orchestra.
They also had Nobuo Uematsu put his actual like versions on there
that
as well.
That might be what it is. So I was like super hyped, and I just like binged all of that. And it's
Balam Garden, incredible.
Yeah, like listening to Final Fantasy music, for some reason, especially Final Fantasy VIII, because of the twinge, the sci-fi elements that they start putting into the musical score, I really find that that just speaks to me. I just enjoy the audio space it creates.
Oh my dude,
you've got more iconic songs in the likes of like Final Fantasy VII's One Winged Angel and stuff like that. Absolutely understand that. They are like iconic, but I feel like in terms of overall consistency, that the music from Final Fantasy VIII just really is just a cut above the rest.
My thing is like Final Fantasy 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, especially like 7, 8, 9, 10, and then for me that jump until like 14 has a phenomenal soundtrack, but I feel like it hasn't, it's still not to the heights of those original ones, but 14 has a really good like sonic landscape to it.
14 has got an absolutely belter track in it where I'm pretty sure that it's like, it might be Final Fantasy 11 or 14. I might be getting my facts confused here, but there's a special event where you could go and you defeated all of these little Moogles that had like different like capes and like a knight outfit, and they all like represented different fantasy elements. And once you've beaten all of them, they summoned the Moogle King. And what they did was the music that went with it kind of sounded like a Final Fantasy version of This Is Halloween.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it is a banger, man. Well, like, if you haven't listened to it, go and listen to it. It's so funny.
Massively agree that the triple triad theme is the best battle theme of all time.
I love it so much.
It's stellar.
So good.
But the thing is, like, that's what I was going to say about Final Fantasy VIII is that when I was a kid, one of my friends was playing VII. I was around their house and I was like, oh my God, this is great. I was the bit with the Midgar Zolom. And we were like six or seven years old or something. And I begged my mum to go to HMV in the Metro Center in Gateshead. That references people who only live around here. I'm ill. My brain is going. But went there to get Final Fantasy VII and they didn't have it in because obviously it was a big deal at the time. Yeah. But they did have Final Fantasy VIII. And I just thought, because I didn't know the difference, I was like, well, 8's clearly better than 7 because it's one
upgraded
number higher. It's like the Nigel Tufnell thing. It's one higher. So I got Final Fantasy VIII, got home, realized it wasn't remotely the same thing. But so 8 was my first proper Final Fantasy. So I think whatever your first one is, all those themes, all those bits of music, like that feel of that game proper embeds itself in. And the whole thing with 8 being like this university student who's like learning to be a warrior, learning to be a member of Seed and everything. Just incredible. But yeah, overall, we talked about, you know, that's the difference between score and soundtrack. Soundtrack for me would be Vice City or San Andreas, probably Vice City.
Yeah.
And then score, maybe Halo 3. Halo 2, actually.
Halo Infinite's got a banging soundtrack.
I was just going to say, I didn't know until they released it that Gareth Coker is one of the composers on Halo Infinite. Mm-hmm. He's the Ori and the Will of the Wisps guy. And once I realized he was like, he's one third, I think, of the Halo Infinite stuff, just had that on repeat. He has a song called Know Your Legend or Know My Legend.
Yeah. Yeah.
That thing has not left my on repeat playlist for the last like month or something.
Because I know that we were talking about it, that you wanted to kind of like the Mjolnir remix of the like the sort of like the crazy like guitar thing. But I'm actually glad that it's not in there because I
know
it's
way more whimsical. Yeah.
It's very cheesy that like the Steve Vai one. But I do enjoy its place as being like it just shows how iconic the riffs are. But have you seen the little Easter egg with the grunt saying that he hates the song?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a bit where he's like humming it and then he's just what even is this?
He goes, nah, 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 nah. And I was like, God, I hate that song.
There's one great bit. The grunts are great in Halo Infinite. There's one bit where they're both running at you with twin plasma grenades and he's like, I didn't even mean to set these off.
Yeah, he's like, help, help, help.
It's great. But I did a little mini freak out on video there because the new Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon is out and it's nowhere close to the same gameplay as standard Shovel Knight or the expansions.
Okay.
Still made by, it's made by Vine in tandem with Yacht Club, but the soundtrack is still scored by Jake Kaufman. So it is more of Jake Kaufman's soundtracks, and he just does some of the best music around.
Yeah, there's a mastery of like the 8-bit soundscape that he does there. It's just incredible.
He's bringing so much in from Crypt of the Necrodancer and the Hyrule one they did, Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah, that's really good.
It's kind of like taking old school Shovel Knight themes and just making them like thumping, like they're just sort of electronic and they're bigger. And oh my God, like Pocket Dungeon is such an addictive little game. Like it's really cool, really tight. So those would be mine. Did you have a score?
So my score one would be the Final Fantasy VIII soundtrack.
Yes.
And I would say that my soundtrack one, like compilation of songs, probably would actually go to Cyberpunk. The music in Cyberpunk is amazing. And the Run the Jewels track that they recorded for it is a belter. There's moments where I just sat in my car just going like... And I was like, yeah,
I can't think off the top of my head what the really like dark synth song is in that game. But overall, like you said, Cyberpunk has such a like great diversity of genre as well. Like it's such a body of work.
Yeah.
Part of me, and maybe this was just me being ill at the time talking, but I remember thinking that Cyberpunk was as good as a classic GTA soundtrack. I was like, it's up there. Like
even though half of the people that were playing I'd never heard of. If I'm going to hold my hands up, like I like a lot of electronic music, but I didn't know a lot of that and the hip hop stuff that they put in. Same. But I was like so willing to go and explore these artists afterwards because I was like, these are brilliant tracks.
Yeah, yeah. And like in terms of like enhancing the city feel, like that was the thing. That was one of the reasons I said that back in the day, I said that Mafia 3 was like up there with the old GTAs because I was like, this feels like a place in a way where the environment and the soundtrack are one kind of thing.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work.
You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Vin Van Meel, who says, "Ahoy, Ledgers, what games left you underwhelmed or surprised this year? Also, what are your predictions for 2022 in gaming? Death by NFT microtransactions, I assume. Love you." Also, we got a question from Willie Araya, who says, "Peter Molyneux and NFTs, that's my question. Have a Merry Christmas."
Are we even surprised that Peter Molyneux's next snake oil business venture? I literally read the article you sent over for the recording here from Rock Paper Shotgun. And yep. So Peter Molyneux's next game is a blockchain business game named Legacy, which has already sold over £40 million of its virtual land in NFTs. Tell you what, Peter, I know you don't know me. And to be honest, I don't want to know you. But the thing is that you have haunted, you have plagued my entire childhood with your lies and your promises that just never come to fruition. I do not understand how you keep getting a silver shovel of money is delivered to your house every single day. Like, I've got nothing against him as a person. I bet you I could go like and sit next to him and have a pint with him and have a really nice chat. But yeah. I would leave there with like about 15 discount Rolexes that say Relox on it and stinking of aftershave that he's just fished out of a toilet bowl. The man is the Del Boy of the gaming industry. Like, and it's not slander, this, because everything he's done has actually been
Well, I mean, like, Goddess is still in early access. Goddess never left early access. He made all that money from the Kickstarter, and then that game never got finished. There was the whole
Cube one is the one that's done my head in.
And that was like connect. Yeah, that was the one that if you got to the center of it, you would be the god,
and then you would share the profits never of it, and it never happened. So the guy's there, he just like goes, "Cool, you've won. You've won 100% of nothing."
Like, yeah, and then now, so yeah, the NFT thing, like obviously NFT is one of the biggest buzzword things to talk about right now. Because for the most part, they just appear to be a massive scam in regards to you are owning a digital thing, but no actual copyright, no actual license, no actual code, nothing other than saying that you paid to own something. So it's literally monetizing the philosophy, the feeling of ownership and nothing else.
It's almost like it's an amazing way to do money laundering.
Oh. Well, as is literally the case in this case, Peter Molyneux's latest thing, it's called I think it's called Land or something, but either way you're buying
Legacy
and you're buying land in the game. Yeah. And it's almost like Capitalist Simulator. You're sort of buying land, you're building factories, you're trying to hire workers.
So you are paying to own a portion of a game that at some point in time will stop getting updates. It will die. It will not exist. There will be a record of it somewhere, but it may not be online or be accessible to play at some point in the future. So I ask you, why are you buying it? What is the purpose?
I think
you say about the sense of ownership, sense of pride and owning something, but it's not a tangible product. It doesn't exist. It's the same thing why I get so annoyed whenever I buy a digital game download and I question to myself, why did I just pay a full price retail experience for something that I don't actually own and can't transfer between consoles and I can't trade in again? Why is it not 10, 15, 20 pounds cheaper because I'm not paying the cost of production? It really grinds my grapes, mate.
Well, I mean, in this case, like I said, I think it's zeroing in on that feeling of ownership, and that's the thing. And if you're someone who's like one of the whales in the industry, you have a lot of disposable income and you just want to hoover up a bunch of stuff. And in this case, like, Molyneux has almost geniusly zeroed in on that. He's like, okay, you can be a digital land magnate and just put as much money into it as you want. You convert real money for land coins or whatever they're called, and you buy all that stuff. So you own these digital plots of land, these digital factories, digital workers, everything else. And that's like, they've already managed to ship. If you equate it back to real money, it equates out at like £40 million or something.
Madness.
But it's all pre-release. It's all, the game's not live yet. It's all stuff that you can just pre-bake. So there's a weird line in the RPS interview, or the RPS write-up, that says, none of this has any actual use even in the game yet. And the people who are buying in are just hoping that this economy is going to work when it all kicks off. But that doesn't get away from the reality that NFTs, for the most part, feel like a big old scam. Like, I think that there's, like, it's interesting watching the Beeple thing, because he was one of the first digital artists to sell their stuff. And for me, I'm like, okay, maybe there's a way where this enables digital artists to finally get paid properly for their work. Yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But all the other applications are horrendous and have been shown to be horrendous so far.
It like exacerbates a level of greed that's always been within the video game industry. Yeah. And like it's genuinely, and I don't want to sound like it's hyperbole, but it is sickening to look at some of the stuff that's going on when it's like, oh, I'm going to just knock out three or four pictures, really badly drawn stick men, but because of the clout that I can carry with it, and I'm basically just selling them for like tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Well, there was one individual land plot that was like £670,000 or something it went for inside the game. But obviously that's going between the digital currency, the cryptocurrency and the real money. But if you translated it back, it would be like real money again. I remember saying, I think I said to Josh at one point earlier, a few months ago or something, or maybe it was last year, time's a flat circle. But when microtransaction stuff started dying down a little bit, when there was a lot of backlash against it, and you still have them inside various games, but it's not as bad as it was in 2017. I remember sort of thinking, and I'm sure I said it to either you or Josh, I wonder what the next thing is
that'll come along
and just break everything again. And this is it. This is the next big struggle. This is the next thing that we're going to have to rally against for the next few months or years.
Yeah, my biggest worry is going to be when we start potentially seeing NFTs and video games themselves. Like, it'll be...
They're already there?
What, you can actually buy them in games now?
Oh yeah, well, the Ubisoft Quartz thing is already live. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh man, I actually didn't know that. That's despicable, that is.
It's going. I mean, the thing is, like, the Stalker 2 devs had a whole thing across the last couple of days where they tried to launch some NFT stuff, and the fan base just like unanimously said, F this. So they announced it. They put a press statement out saying, oh, sorry, we'll not be doing that. But it's going to come down to each individual basis. But yeah, Ubisoft put their trailer out. Everyone disliked it, so they deleted the trailer, but they still pushed ahead with the actual NFTs themselves.
It's so funny, isn't it, when companies do that, where they just chance their arm, and if anyone calls them on it, they're like, ah, yeah, you got us, fair enough, we'll stop doing that. But if no one did, then they would actually be like running rampant with them.
Yeah, and it's like, and that's also the thing with, like, I mean, the thing is, once you start applying this to Call of Duty and the different things that Activision can do, and it's like, hey, Tony Hawk's like, hey, what if you could pay to own the one Hawk board that's in this game? And it's like, how much would you pay? Let's put a bidding war and like all that kind of thing. Yeah, it's going to be the next big thing. I think that it does capitalize on, opportunism. It capitalizes on some of the worst consumer trends.
Yeah.
And it's probably only going to get worse from here.
You know, CSGO used to like, it was a massive thing with the trading skins market, like the skins that can go for like thousands and thousands of bucks. Like, you know that somebody out there would want to pay over the odds for having a Call of Duty rifle with a custom variant like skin on it. Like, you know that that's going to happen. Yeah. Like,
I remember when, I forget the exact executive I've mentioned this in a couple of videos. I should probably find out who it is because I keep quoting the guy, but I forget who it actually was. But he was giving an example of how NFT stuff would work. And he's like, oh, in Mario Kart, imagine if you could own Mario and only you could play as Mario. And he's like, that's the kind of thing that we want to do going forward. I'm like, that's the death of everything to me.
Yeah, that sounds
horrible.
That's the
end of video games.
That sounds absolutely horrible because you are literally just making it either a pay to play and you're only going to be rewarding the uber rich.
And it's like, if you were that person who owned Mario, like, okay, that would come with a very specific feeling. You would feel empowered, I guess, whatever word you want to put on that. But it would also be awful for literally everybody else.
Yeah.
But then again, lol, capitalism. So I guess it is that. It's literally that model.
we're falling into the BioShock world, I swear.
I know,
man.
So it's just, I'm very curious how it's going to go. There are success stories, but only a successful implementation of NFTs.
Yeah.
And the actual conversation around it is unanimously negative.
I tell you what,
have gone back on it.
You and I, little lovely icons that we've got that we use for the Untitled Banter podcast.
Oh, yes.
The ones that we're going to be putting on the mug. Let's sell both of them as NFTs and give the money to charity, because at least we'd be doing something good with that then.
The thing is, I don't think the cryptocurrency is that easily transferable back to real money. I don't know if charities are even accepting crypto donations, but that would be a good way to go.
I won't even pretend to understand the complications of moving money between realms, as it were.
It kind of almost literally is between realms. It's like into the cyberpunk dimension and then back out again. But that whole thing is going to be a 2022 conversation. I think for now, just have a nice cup of a hot drink and wait for it all to blow over until next year. Next question from PG Quips, who says, just recovering from the dreaded C word that should not be named. That sucks, but very much glad you're recovering from it.
Yeah, hope you're all right, man.
10 days isolated. I've got Halo Infinite, Battlefield 2042, and Skyrim Anniversary, not even sorry, getting me through. What game can you not stop going back to? He says Medieval 2, Total War, and Skyrim for me. Also, Merry Christmas.
That is a great shout. And Skyrim is a perfect example of a game you just can't stop coming back to, because every single time they put out a new edition, it's got something new. And you think, oh, I'm just going to go back and
re-download it. I didn't buy the new stuff, but I did re-download it again just to be like, okay, I'll play it a couple hours. And it's still Skyrim. Can confirm 10 years later, it's still Skyrim.
I've been playing Fallout New Vegas on stream over on Live and Let's Dice, and also just in general for since it came out in 2010. So I think that is my game that I cannot stop going back to, because even though I've theoretically seen and done, I'd say about 80% of the game, because there's still so much stuff that little bits that you only see in certain scenarios. Mm-hmm. I am still going, wait a minute, what happens here? Because my memory of it has been lost to time. And I'm like, oh man, this is mad. I feel like every time I'm playing it, I'm experiencing it for the first time, which is such a lovely feeling.
I need to spend a lot more time in New Vegas. That's the one I've played the least. I did 3 and 4, and then I've done little chunks in New Vegas, but not nowhere near enough. Mine would just be multiplayer stuff. It would just be Rocket League was on my system for 6 years on my PS4, then PS5, only replaced by Knockout City this year. But then even that's been replaced by Halo, because I also have to have
we're doing a lot of Halo at the moment, aren't we?
I'm verging about 70 hours on Halo. It's a lovely time, but I can't. That's the thing. I'm like, I'll play a couple games on the way to something else, and then I just don't play anything else because I can't get off Halo. So at the minute, it's definitely Halo. But over the years, it used to be Rocket League. That was the thing that I just went to every single time. Next and potentially final question is from Red Bear, who says, can you have a UBP Game of the Year segment, discuss a title that we should all try at least once?
Okay, well, we actually did our Game of the Year rankings for the regular podcast, which has gone out.
Yes, that'll be out by now. That's a blind rank of every member of the What Culture Gaming team submitting to me a blind rank of what they think the top 10 is. It's a weighted ranking, so number one is 10 points, number two is 9 points. And I totted it all up and revealed what our actual Game of the Year is. So that's over on that's also on the podcast feed. That's me, Jules, and Ben Roy dissecting the insanity that list became.
There was quite a few surprises in that list, I won't lie, because I was like, wait, what? Okay, fair enough.
But
much
stuff
higher
between me and you, because when you told me the stuff that you've been playing this, you did have some smaller titles that I guess are worth highlighting for your personal recommendation.
Like No More Heroes 3 is an absolute wild ride. It makes no sense whatsoever, to the point where trying to piece the plot together is going to require a few essays and a few Charlie Day string diagrams from Always Sunny. but it's a brilliant experience. The combat's never felt tighter. It's never been weirder. There's so many more like interesting and crazy characters. There's just more. You know when people always say like less is more? Well, this is the idea of more is more, and you are getting more whether you like it or not. So buckle up and make sure that you bring some eye drops, because your eyes will be dry from being blasted by all the colors.
I forgot that came out this year until you like submitted me your ranking, and I was like, oh yeah, like that. Like, because I played the top-down one, which kind of put me off for a while.
Yeah, it wasn't as good, was it?
Yeah, I finally played, like, 1 and 2 a bit, and so I was like, I'll get to 3 eventually, but I haven't got around to it yet. But yeah, No More Heroes 3 is, like, a perfect recommendation for this year. Mine would be a much smaller couple games, Monimals, which I think I've mentioned on here.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Monimals is the game which is, it's music software. It's kind of like the music games that were on PS1, but you're collecting notes by fishing for them and then putting different songs together, different bass notes, different guitar notes, different synth notes. If you just want to sit and make badass synth noises. Which I do, you can.
The Ghosts and Goblins Resurrections game was pretty fun as well. I really enjoyed that. If you're in the mood for some challenging yet really aesthetically beautiful gameplay, then I would say that that's a good shout. If you've got, it's not actually even that long, to be fair, either. I probably bashed through the entire experience in about maybe 5 to 6 hours, but that's a perfect little nugget of gold. Gaming time, and then I was able to go through it again on like the harder difficulty, and you've got like new power ups, you've got new weapon styles. It was a really fun game.
Speaking of side scrolling stuff as well, I took a mug of water there. I sounded like I was expiring, but I took a mug of water. Now I'm slightly better. But yeah, speaking of side scrolling stuff, Cyber Shadow, another one that's published by Yacht Club, made by one guy. I forget his full name. Someone Hunziger, but he goes by the name Mecha Skull. But that's a really cool side scrolly. You play as like a ninja. It's very Ninja Gaiden, but you get a lot of power ups, and it's very cyberpunky. But you're like a cyberpunk ninja. Really, really cool game. And my last one would be Sable, which is a really gorgeous cel shaded open world puzzle game, where you're just out there exploring. There's no combat in it, but it's very tranquil, very rewarding, and just looks absolutely gorgeous. So they would be mine.
Good selection there.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I'm going to end on. Because we've been doing about half an hour, haven't we? Because we restarted.
And we started at like 11:30-ish, I think.
Okay.
No, we started at like 37 minutes, I think.
Right, okay. Let's just do one last gimmicky one.
Sure.
Okay, one final question is from Haley from the North Pole. Terry's chocolate oranges. Thoughts?
Oh, I mean, you can't have a Christmas without them. I mean, the thing is that I'm not entirely sure, as being a vegan, I'm not entirely sure if I can have them now. I'm pretty sure they do a dark chocolate orange, which I can have.
It's like
have.
A bunch of different variants now, yeah.
I think I can have one of them, but I do remember very fondly. Like, they are the maddest thing ever. Somebody comes up to you and is like, here is like a cricket ball of orange, of orange chocolate, and you can do some damage to it, yourself, that's... and anyone else. And anyone who says, oh yeah, I used to crack it by smashing it on my forehead, like, you're going to cave your skull in, pal. Like, that is them, not a good way to live your life.
That's them watching Stone Cold Steve Austin and going like, yeah, all right then, yeah, I can do this.
Or the Sandman from ECW.
If you go back far enough. I don't know. I don't get the Terry's chocolate orange hype. Like, there was a whole time, this is very UK-based, but there was a whole time where Dawn French, the cultural icon
she is,
was all over the news, all over the adverts for it, and it was like, oh my God, Terry's chocolate orange. And that was a thing. And I've just never... it doesn't get me. Like, I'm like, okay, orange chocolate, cool. There's other orange chocolate. I don't get it. So my thoughts are, it's overrated.
They obviously, the other orange chocolates actually exist outside of Christmas time as well. So like, you can just get them anytime.
It's just, it's like a weird space. I know I said we're going to keep all the Christmas things for next week, but that'll do as a nice segue, as a nice sort of leaving off point for next week. Also, again, massive apologies for the state of my vocals. throughout this recording, but this has been the Entitled Banter podcast. Thank you very much for sending in all your questions. We'll put another tweet out in the next few days to get some more Christmas-based stuff. I have an idea for the sort of things I want to ask you guys about, and we'll do a Christmas special next Friday. For now, though, I always go into the wrong ending.
It's fine, mate.
I'm Scott from whatculture.com. It's an autopilot thing, but it's the Entitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Tailford. You're Jules Gill. We'll catch you very soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to PrettyLitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.